and also celebrate mothers all on the same day. How do you pull that off? How do you pull that hat trick, right? And I keep thinking through, and I keep thinking through, and I keep thinking through, and all of a sudden, I'm sitting at the house, and this comes to mind. I knew Shirley would say that. Okay, now, so let's just stop. Let's put time. For those of you who absolutely hate this book and think it's straight from the devil, I'm not going to preach about the shack today. Okay, so it's all right. You know, there's both extremes with this book. But this book, we talk about how God influences our life and how God works through things. And we were talking in our house church the other day about this book because I think, my goodness. Okay. I was talking in house church the other day and making everyone listen about this book and how I really felt like God had a hand in this book, or at least in my case he did. And that was the point that somebody made, was that, you know, did God have a hand in the book, or did God have a hand in my brain as I absorbed the book? Which way was it? I don't know. But it was a real impact it had on me. And as I started thinking about how does God connect with women, and you think about this book, it's a little bit of a spoiler for you guys, but this is a couple of images that I dug around on the internet and find. This is Hattie McDaniel, who was Mammy back in Gone with the Wind. And then this is a more modern movie, that Octavia Spencer, and I can't remember what her character's name was, but she was a maid in the movie The Help. What was her name? Minnie. M-I-N-I? That kind of, or M-I-N-N-I-E? Not like, okay, all right. M-I-N-N-I-E, all right, Minnie. In the book, The Shack, and so sorry about giving you a little bit of a spoiler here, I won't tell any more than that, but in that book, God is described, and the way God is described in that book, the image for me is what these two ladies are. God is described as being, what's the first characteristic that might stand out to you? Well, I don't know. There could be many. But what do you notice that's unusual about God looking like one of these two people? It's a woman. It's a woman, right. Why can't God be black? It's not, at least for white people, it's not the way we think. And I think most people don't. You know, you might think of God as looking somewhat Jewish or something like that. You might think of God as looking more white American, because that's what we selfish Americans like to think of. Now, let's just open this up a little bit. How does that grab you? How do you feel about thinking about God looks like this? How does that grab you? And you guys can say angry things. I'm okay with that. A strong black woman who's been suppressed by society? By suppressed. Okay. So she is a servant in both cases, right? Her requirement to serve, right? Okay. Yes. Kind of like an extra grandma, like, right.
It's a mentor, it's another mom, it's another person who's around the house. I think it's somebody, like, maybe, I mean, yeah, I know she'd be a servant, but I think more of the nature of, like, she's in the kitchen, she's got cookies, like, I want to go sit down, and I want to talk with her, and I want to be girlfriends, but at the same time, I want to be able to go cry with her.
Okay.
To me, it's like this comforting, mothering.
Comforter, friend, mother, the whole deal.
Mom,
girlfriend.
You know what I mean? So, like,
okay. Okay. I wouldn't consider myself a Bible scholar, but I've not gotten that image out of the Bible, or have I? All right. Well, you like it, right? Then why are you comfortable with that? I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Stephen.
More comforting motherly figure in
They were almost more of a mother than the real mother. Would that be fair? Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right. What about something that makes you uncomfortable? Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Yep, church taking care of his people. Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah, so there's this feminine, very biblical feminine picture of the church being Christ's bride, and so it ties into that, yeah. All right. Anybody, anything about this that kind of rubs you the wrong way? Yeah. Yes, I do too.
So, like, I see these images, and I agree with Shirley, but I also think my God's powerful, right? Like, he's not going to look like a servant and look humble. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful.
I even struggled while I was reading the book. Did I like this just because I'm rebellious? Are any of you guys rebellious? Yeah. Like, you almost like something sometimes just because someone else doesn't like it, right? Right? Like, there's people I know that I knew would not like that image of God, and so there's a part of me that was a little fearsome that maybe I like that just because I can't wait to hear how much they're not going to like it, right? So I'm kind of digging through this thing, and I'm trying to figure out, why am I so comfortable with this? And so I started thinking, what does God look like to me? And I dug around the internet, and I found it. There he is. Is that not God? Well, you know, put a cross or something there. All right, you know. But look at him. He's on his seashell throne or whatever that is. Ariel's there. Yeah, King Triton, right? Right? Yeah. Look at those. Check out those biceps, right? I'm working toward that, right? He's huge. Look at those eyes. Look how his hand is as big as his whole head. Isn't that, that's great cartoon stuff there for you. So, do you guys get what I'm saying? Is this not the way some of us view God? This is the way I view God. God is this guy up in this throne, and he is, you know, you can't build a house without a hammer, right? That kind of guy, right? This is God, right? And yet, that's not necessarily the image of God that I get from the Bible consistently. There's a part of that, certainly, but that's not consistently what I get. Now, let's put another image up. Oh. Have you guys thought about the difference with the way we view Jesus and the way we view God? My family's rereading The Shack, so that's why it's a lot on my mind. And there was a section in there where the point was made that women connect much better with Jesus than they do with God. Any women agree or disagree with that? You think you do? Jesus is supposed to represent God on earth, right? But when we see the way Jesus acts on earth, his life on earth, it doesn't have that same feeling of a guy in a throne with a pitchfork. No, not with a pitchfork, but a guy on a throne who's, you know, issuing these verdicts and these judgments and sending you to either heaven or to hell. You know, you see this guy who actually can hold a lamb, a guy who can love people, who can love the creation that God's got, right? He's the embodiment of love. This guy can hang on a cross and say, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. That vision I have of God would be more like he'd be on his throne and he'd be like, you want to hang me on a cross? Boom. Downstairs you go. Right? You know, King Triton kind of view of God. All right. So I'm beginning to piece together, why am I somewhat more comfortable, or at least not as uncomfortable as some would think I should be, about this vision of God looking like that? Why is that? Why is that? I started thinking about the world around me and trying to make sense of it. Who commits more crime in the world, men or women? Yeah. How many of you guys have like rock solid stats for that? You guys don't need rock solid. We just know it, right? Pick up the newspaper. It's like 95% to 5 or something crazy, right? Who has children and leaves them to go off and pursue a life that they selfishly desire? Are men more apt to do that or women? Men. You know, it's amazing to me the number of times in the professional world that I find out that a husband has come home and told his wife, hey, I got a promotion. We're going to move to, Canada, or we're going to move to England or whatever, because that's a great opportunity for me. And he never even got her input because his career was so important. Those things happen, right? Those things happen all the time in the world around us. Why do I like, by the way, in the shack, it's really interesting because God's name is Papa in the shack. So it's kind of a cool thing that it's an African-American woman called Papa. So why do I like Papa? And I said, I see aspects of God that remind me of my mom. So I should have had my mom come today, although I might have cried. So there's aspects of God that I see in my mom. My mom is an awesome lady. My mom is not a big African-American woman. Those of you who have met my mom, she is a tiny, petite, white as it gets woman. But she's feisty. But I see aspects of God in my mom, and I think that's why I connect so well to this, because these women, the way they're described, kind of reminded me of my mom a little bit. Men, a lot of men seek glory. A lot of moms, their life revolves around their children. Have you guys ever seen that? Like to a fault. Like sometimes you'll see a mom who her daughters are like wearing the nicest clothes, and they have everything they could want. They go on every possible trip that could be done. They're on every program. Their mom runs them all over town for all their activities. And when you see the mom, she is frazzled. She's wearing old clothes because they can't actually afford to do both. Her whole life revolves around her children. Like I said, even sometimes to a fault, but it gives you a sense for how mom's working. How many dads do you see doing that? No, the only time you'll see a dad doing that is whenever he thinks that by supporting his son's going to become a professional football or basketball player. You'll see dads occasionally do that, which really means they're living out their own dream that they were not able to succeed through their children. It's not a terrible thing, but it's way different than just helping your child live out their dreams. Moms are... What'd you say? Toddlers and tiaras. Yeah, yeah. That's okay. Okay. All right. No. Did you say you watch it? Excellent. All right. Kings sentence people to death with no regret. Dictators sentence people to death with no regret. Moms never stop fighting for their children. Moms, when their child has committed murder and their child is in jail, that mom still goes to jail and loves that child and visits them. Moms never give up. That's an aspect of God that sometimes we miss if all we keep envisioning of God is that kind of image. I think Jesus was a huge stepping stone. I think it was a massive thing for God to send Jesus and let us see him on earth and see him live in a way that might not match up with the way some of us view things. All right. So with that said, I have a question for you all. Is God a girl? Ooh. Right. Oh, I can't believe you said it. Okay, I don't like that question. So I have another question. How do girls relate to God? How do women relate to God? How do you pull that off? How do you, when you were talking about this, Shirley, you were nailing exactly one of the things I thought about. How does a woman be able to hang with God? How do you feel comfortable going to God and talking to him? How many of you guys in this room did not have a good father figure in your life? Okay? You didn't have to raise your hand, but I appreciate that. You did not have a good father figure. So to call God a father and to try to warm up to him as a father becomes a massive challenge. It's a roadblock that has been dropped in front of you to make that really super difficult. So how do girls relate to God? Okay, so in the last 5 minutes or so here, I just want to throw a few things at you that I believe will help a little bit. Might help you connect with that. If you've not thought of this before, some of you I'm sure have went through this before, but some of you that maybe haven't had a chance to study the Bible as much, this might be fresh for you. So let me throw these things out there. Let's start with Jesus, because I really believe if you're struggling talking to God, talk to Jesus. It's a nice step in between. Jesus is going to be much, much more approachable for you. Listen to these words. This is just awesome. This is in Matthew 23. This is in this section of the Bible where it's the seven woes. So Jesus is saying woe about this and woe about that. Intermixed in that, in red, so we know it's from Jesus, it says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often have I longed to gather your children together?" And here he comes. "As a hen gathers her chicks under her wings." This is one confident dude, right? How many guys are going to refer to themselves as a hen gathering chicks under his wings, right? Is that crazy? I would never say that. You guys, you guys might think I'd say that, but I wish you wouldn't think that. It doesn't say much about me. I want you guys to grasp that. That is a very, very feminine picture that Jesus made of himself there. And I don't think it's necessarily by happenstance. I think it's just an example of who he is. He's not about trying to be this tough guy. Jesus is about being the person that God wants him to be. He is God. He's a representation of God. And he was very comfortable saying that he is going to long to gather the children together, to gather the followers of God together, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. But don't stop at Jesus. You guys have tons in common with God. So let's go all the way back to Genesis. I'm going to show you a verse here in a minute. But let's go back to the beginning of the Bible. So this is kind of where it all started. The interesting thing about the first five books of the Bible is that the information in those books came from God. This is not someone living through some experience and then retelling that experience. Someone could debate in the New Testament, hey, Paul is writing something down. Someone could debate. They could say, did God tell Paul to write that down, or did Paul just happen to experience that? You could have those debates. But when it comes to the Old Testament, the beginning, there was no one to write anything down. How was the world created? There's no one to write that down. These words came from God at some point to Moses, or at least that's what we believe it was the person. They came to somebody, but we believe it was Moses, and he wrote this down. And so imagine God says, Moses, get ready. I got something to tell you. So Moses sits down with his new erasable pen or whatever he's got, and his big chunk of paper or bark or something, and he gets, or maybe a stone that he's going to chisel on, I don't know, whatever it is, like the Flintstones. And God starts off by saying to him, in the beginning, I, God, created the heavens and the earth. Now, when we read through this, what we love to talk about is we like to say, well, yeah, because here's what happened. God first did this, and he did this on the first day, and then he did this on the second day, and we like to list this all out and say this is exactly how it all happened. But if you're Moses and you're hearing this, and he says, in the beginning, I created the heavens and the earth, this is a shocking, crazy kind of thing to say. Because there were lots of gods being worshipped in the world, okay? And what God was saying right in the very beginning, and he does it through all those 6 days of creation, he is saying, everything that you're attributing to other gods, I made. I did this. He is rocking the world. He's saying, life as you see it is not right. I'm going to start right here. The very first thing that I want you to write down is about how this world is a very different place than the way you see it. And how do you think women were treated in this time? Anybody have any idea? Not well, yeah. Were they viewed equal with men? No, not even in the ballpark. Probably, maybe slightly better than animals, but certainly viewed as a different level than a man, okay? Men were the ones that ruled everything. On the sixth day, this is what God tells, it says right there, then God said, this is what God tells Moses to write down. He says, let us make mankind in our image. And you can imagine that right there, Moses says, time out. Whoa, whoa, whoa. First of all, who's our God? I thought this would be your image, not our. So what's going on there? Okay, we won't do that today, but certainly an interesting concept because we weren't talking about Jesus and Holy Spirit and all that kind of stuff necessarily back then. But then the other one he would say is, you're saying that you made us in your image? Like we're almost like you? That's crazy because there's gods that are way up here and there's man and then there's woman. That would have been the order that happened in. And right away, God is kind of knocking that down and saying, hey, no, you're a lot like me. And he goes on to say, he says, in our likeness, so that they, so man may rule. And again, you can see Moses saying, stop, stop, stop. We're going to rule. We're going to rule? Like, that's not what we do. You rule. We follow, right? God said, no, this is different. So that they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all creatures that move along the ground. So, and here's the biggie. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Most scholars will agree that last line, the fact that he throws male and female into the same sentence, was a pretty big deal. Pretty big deal. That is kind of a women's lib movement of Genesis, almost, kind of a thing, all right? You guys with me? You guys fall asleep? All right, good deal. All right, I want to show you a couple other examples of how I want you guys to begin to connect with God and realize that maybe your image of God, if you're struggling with that, might not be quite in line. In Isaiah, just a little snippet out of there, these are, again, God's words talking about that as a mother comforts her child, so will I comfort you. Not a particularly masculine picture, right? And God is saying, this is the way I work. I am just as a mother who comforts a child. And the last one I want to hit in Hosea. When Israel was a child, I loved him. Again, these were God's words. And out of Egypt, I called my son. But the more they were called, the more they went away from me. They sacrificed to the Baals, that's other gods. They burned incense to images. It was I who taught Ephraim. He's again just talking about the children of Israel. It was I who taught Ephraim to walk, taking them by the arms. But they did not realize it was I who healed them. I led them with cords of human kindness, with ties of love. To them, I was like the one who lifts a little child to the cheek and bent down to feed them. There's not many guys I know that would write that. That is a very maternal type of paragraph there. You could kind of envision Jesus doing that. But when you're thinking about King Triton sitting on the throne, it's something that's tough to connect to. I'm saying all this to say that in summary, women have a lot to connect with God in. And guys, as you continue to fight understanding and having that side of your personality, you need to stop fighting that, right? It's something that I'm terrible at, but I'm learning as time goes on, the more I soften up on that, not to not be a man, but I soften up to realize that my image of masculinity and femininity may be out of whack, right? My desire to hide love and to hide care and to hide this, what we would call a soft side, is probably not in line. Jesus showed it over and over. We can see images here of God and women. I hope you can grasp today that you got a lot more in touch with this guy than what you might think. So to wrap things up, we're going to have communion today. We've got about 7 minutes. So if the guys at the table or whoever's at the table there, if you guys can put some crackers out on a plate there, just so you know, everything, the crackers today are all gluten-free. So anybody that needs that, you don't have to separate. It's all together. I hope that works out well for you at least. And we're also going to pour individual juice for everybody. So just pour a small amount in each cup and just start pouring them, and we'll start handing those out in just a minute. We're going to have three prayers today. The first prayer is going to be a prayer for our mothers, okay? So for the mothers who have had children, maybe the mothers who have lost children, there may be mothers right here today in our room that none of us know you're a mother, that you've lost a child. There may be mothers in our room today that don't even know that they lost a child somewhere along the line. It's a prayer for all mothers, and that is going to be by Mr. Ben Newell. I'll give him a microphone in just a second. The second prayer is going to be for our future mothers. Eric's going to do that prayer for us. And Eric, if you don't mind, include a prayer for for the ladies that want to be a mother, and it's not happening. I mean, it's all part of that, but it's a tough, tough situation. We recognize that. So prayer for our future mothers. And then the final prayer by Mr. Ritchie will be a praise to Father who sometimes loves us like a mother. It's a weird thing to think about. It might make you a little uncomfortable. But I think for me, the big thing that stood out as I went through this and kept going through this, wide was that image of God as a African-American, black, strong woman. Why was that standing out to me? It's because it allowed me to think of God and understand a side of God that I always believed was there, but I had a hard time envisioning. And so by changing my vision of that, by the author using it that way, that had a great impact on me. So we'll start off with the first prayer by Ben Newell. Have you got mic number 2 turned on, Dalton? Okay, so we'll let Ben pray, and then we'll let Eric pray, and then we're going to take a pause, and we're going to pass out communion to everybody, and then we'll do the final prayer and have communion. Okay, does that work? Yes, Shirley. I think so, yeah.